This is Backseat Box Office, episode number 326, for the weekend of August 10th through August 12th. Hey, this is Jeff.
And this is Art.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and you are listening to Backseat Box Office, this podcast that Art and myself both talk about movies, TV, and other things entertainment related. And so, without further ado, let me introduce Art for the second time. How's it going, Art?
It's going good. Hanging in there. Still recuperating from the long week last week, and I'm sure we'll get into that more later.
Yes, that might be share time. So for those that haven't listened before or don't remember, since it's been a while since we recorded, first thing we do is we talk about what happened at the last weekend for the box office, and then we look ahead to what's coming out in the theater this weekend, and then we have the aforementioned share time where we talk about things that we've been up to. Whether what we've been watching or what we've been doing. And at the end, we kind of look around and see what entertainment news we might find interesting for the group. So let's start with last week's box office. So we're going to be talking about last weekend, which was August 3rd through August 5th. So here's your top five. At number one, in its second week of release, we have Mission: Impossible - Fallout at $35.3 million. At number two, we have new release Disney's Christopher Robin at $24.6 million. We have at number three, another new release, The Spy Who Dumped Me at $12.1 million. And at number four, we have Mamma Mia! Exclamation point. Here we go again in its third week of release at a cool $9 million. And also in its third week release, we have at number five, The Equalizer 2 at $8.8 million. So there's your top five. At number six, just missing the cut, Hotel Transylvania 3, Summer Vacation, $8 million even. So, not a great weekend at the box office.
No, not at all. I was really excited for The Spy Who Dumped Me. I thought it looked really funny. And I'm surprised at such a soft opening. I guess it was soft openings all around. Hardest hit being Mission Impossible.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just a bad time of year. Or, yeah, because I think this is going to be the first movie where, oh my God, I just blanked on her name. Kate McKinnon. Mm-hmm. Is not like in an ensemble. It's, you know, she's like a co-lead,
right,
in this movie. So,
well, if you figure between her, the girlfriend, and the actual spy, is three enough to make an ensemble? I mean, how much is he actually in the movie?
Well, I'm thinking like Ghostbusters.
Yeah, right? No, for sure.
Or that one movie where it's like a woman version of The Hangover. I can't remember what that movie's called.
Oh, nope. I know which one you're talking about. I just can't think of the name. But no, I absolutely adore her and am in love with her. After seeing Ghostbusters and then the trailer for this, I was like, she's my new favorite actress. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I will. I want to see this. It's sad that it's not doing well. Maybe it's not any good. Maybe we're just having a slow week in general. We'll have to see what happens.
Yeah. Well, you know, 12 million opening off a $40 million budget. Maybe they can make money. Who knows?
Yeah, I think they'll make their money. But yeah, I mean, a much harder spot is Mission Impossible.
True.
That's a big drop. So.
All right, so that's going to conclude our look at last weekend's box office. So let's transition over to what's coming out in the theater this weekend. And we have one big movie coming out this weekend, and Art is going to tell us what that is.
All right. Our big movie is The Meg. It is 50% rotten on the tomato meter, 50 reviews counted, 25 fresh, 25 rotten, 94% want to see it out of 1,000 user ratings. A deep-sea submersible, part of an international undersea observation program, has been attacked by a massive creature, previously thought to be extinct, and now lies disabled at the bottom of the deepest trench in the Pacific. With its crew trapped inside, with time running out, expert deep-sea rescue diver Jonas Taylor, Jason Statham, is recruited by a visionary Chinese oceanographer, Winston Chow, against the wishes of his daughter, Su Yin, Li Bingbing. To save the crew and the ocean itself from this unstoppable threat, a prehistoric 70-foot-long shark known as the Megalodon. What no one could have imagined is that years before, Taylor had encountered the same terrifying creature. Now teamed with Su Yin, he must confront his fears and risk his own life to save everyone trapped below. Rated PG-13 for action, peril, bloody images, and some language. Genres: action-adventure, horror, science fiction, and fantasy. Directed by John Turteltaub. Written by Dean Gregorius and John Hober and Eric Hober. Runtime 114 minutes, so just shy of 2 hours. Hmm. We have Rainn Wilson, Masioka. Cliff Curtis. Those are the people I recognize who haven't been named already.
Yay, another shark movie.
Yeah. A really big shark movie, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't have any desire to see this. This is a watch on cable.
Okay. It actually looks like it might be fun, but I don't know if it's gonna wade into the Sharknado waters.
I think it's not Sharknado territory.
All right, so as we are wont to do, let's talk about what the critics are saying about this movie, The Meg. Okay, so from the phone it in category, Don K from Den of Geek, who ended up giving it 3.5 out of 5. So this is a fresh review. Even if some of the Meg's CG-generated moves look a little fishy from time to time, that's almost part of the fun.
Wow. Okay, this one caught my eye. Rebecca Paul from the Film Journal International. Is it a particularly great movie? No. Does it have some pretty major structural problems? Yes. Does Jason Statham fight a giant prehistoric shark in it? Yes. Verdict? See The Meg. The Meg will cleanse your soul.
Yeah.
I think she's really saying turn off your brain and go enjoy an action flick. Which, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I don't think there's...
No, there's really not a lot going here.
Oh, from Justin Chang from Los Angeles Times. The Meg, stolidly directed by John Turteltaub, winds up proving a fairly obvious theory about its chosen subgenre. The more massive the shark and the budget, the lighter the scares are and the lower the stakes. Okay, so that's going to do it for the one movie that is coming out in the theaters this weekend. So now, let's start our share time. All right, so we do have a voicemail. We are going to listen to that right now. So take it away, Ted.
Hey, Backseat Box Office, this is Tad calling in with what I've been watching. Let's see, I've been watching quite a bit. So I watched about 2 seasons of The Blacklist. It was a show I used to watch, so I had 2 seasons stacked up on my DVR. It's a really good show. James Spader is awesome in it. I can recommend that show to anybody. It's kind of, you know, if you like your procedural shows, but it has a really good kind of underlying week-to-week story. And it changes a little bit from year to year or season to season. So, I really like it and recommend it. Let's see. I've also seen 2 movies. I saw, what was it, Skyscraper, the one with The Rock. And, if you want an action movie, it's a good action movie. The Rock, The Rock does what he does best and delivers. So if that's what you're looking for, Go see that movie. And then I saw The Equalizer 2. You guys talked about that last week, and I think it was like art. I watched the show as a kid. I think I said this when the first Equalizer came out, the first Equalizer movie. I watched it as a kid, and I watched it with my mother, and it was kind of our mother-son bonding type of thing. And so I really enjoyed that. So I'll probably go see an Equalizer movie that comes out just because it brings back that nostalgia for me. While I was in the theater seeing that movie, I went and saw, there was a movie, what's it called? The Dark Web, Unfriended, The Dark Web or something. And all the reviews on it looked pretty bad, but it had just started when I got out, and I decided to go see what it was like. And I was in there probably for about 20 or 30 minutes, and it's basically a guy steals a computer, and on the computer there's a bunch of, like, people being, you know, on the Dark Web where they kill people, and other people watch it and pay to see it, and he steals this computer. Well, he takes it out of a lost and found. We're spending a lost and found for 3 weeks, and if you had that kind of stuff on a computer, would you leave it in a lost and found for 3 weeks? So I don't know. The whole premise of the story was kind of dumb anyway. But, yeah, it was basically a bunch of friends on Skype talking to each other and just doing stuff, and I don't know if it changed after that, but I got kind of tired of watching it. Or, you know, I didn't really plan on staying. I hadn't paid to see it anyway, so I felt kind of bad about being in there. But I just wanted to see what it was like and see if maybe it was something I'd be interested in for later, and it's definitely not. So, I finished up The Expanse, and Killjoy's first episode just came out. I haven't watched it yet, but I'm planning on doing that. Let's see. Oh, and I've started watching a second season of Luke Cage. It's pretty good so far. I'm enjoying it. The bad guy's kind of cool. Hey guys, this is Pat calling in again. Sorry, I got the voicemail app cut me off there because I was getting a little long-winded. But like I was saying, the bad guy, Bushmaster, is pretty cool in the cage. And heard a lot of people say the Jamaicans are hard to understand, so they've had to put on subtitles. I haven't put on subtitles yet. I'm kind of getting that. I for the most part, I understand what they're saying. But, you know, subtitles wouldn't be a bad idea, I guess, but I just wanted to bother to put them on, and I'm getting the story, so I haven't really messed with that. But good show, and I have some more stuff to talk about, but I'll save that for next week. All right, guys, thanks a lot for the show. Liking it. Glad you guys got 2 weeks in a row. Let's see if we can keep that up. All right, guys. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you, Tad. Always, as always, it's always nice to hear from you. Art, what have you been up to?
Okay, well, let's see. Did I ever tell you I finished the first season of The Expanse?
I don't think so, but it's been a while.
I don't think so. Yeah, it has been a while. So I finally finished off the first season, and I'm itching to go on the second. So thoroughly enjoying it. That was a recommendation from Tad. I don't know, two voicemails back, maybe three. So I finally got off my butt and listened to it after his voicemail encouraging us to go do it. And I really enjoyed it. And I need to find some time to start digging into season two. I just recently rewatched the original Lion King. Aubrey had been wanting to see it. I don't know what put it in her head. We had been watching The Lion King 1/2 more regularly, and she had never seen The Lion King. So it was interesting to see her, like, it's interesting. She has expectations based on, you know, seeing it from the point of view of Timon and Pumbaa instead of from Simba's viewpoint. All the pieces that
the 2.5.
The 1.5.
Or the 1.5, excuse me.
The 1.5, yeah. It's got a Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead kind of a vibe to it. And it's just really interesting to go back. And all the songs that aren't in the other movie, because they're done on this side, we were singing along to. And at one point, I was like, have you guys seen this movie? Because Brittany watched it with us too. I'm like, yeah, this movie's a little older than you are. So we both know these songs. So it was just kind of funny. It was enjoyable. I don't really remember. I feel like I've seen something else and I've completely forgotten because last week was a real blur with going to Gen Con. I hadn't been in quite some years, and I went, I saw, I conquered. No, I had an absolute blast. Played a ton of games, just saw a bunch of stuff. I mean, it is Gen Con. It is always worth doing. I haven't heard anything in the final numbers, but probably, 65 to 70,000 people there. So yeah, I had a lot of fun, did a road trip, got to hang out with a ton of people, and I won't be doing it again next year. It's not the type of thing I do year after year, but it's something I do go back to from time to time because it's in effect gamer mecca. So yeah, that was my week last week, and so it kind of made everything else blur together. How about yourself, sir?
All right, so I did a bad job because I really didn't write down what I'd been watching the 2 weeks prior before, because I ended up going to Gen Con too. So this was a lot of firsts. First time I've been to Indiana. First time meeting my co-host in real life. That is something that I will remember forever.
Absolutely.
First time I went to White Castle.
I didn't hear about that. So what did you think?
It was really good.
Yeah.
And I, the reputation of White Castle and what that does to your digestive tract, that never showed up.
I've never had that problem. I don't know where that comes from.
Yeah. We split 10.
Okay.
And we split 10 sliders, and I felt like I could eat another 10, because.
Oh, they're so good.
The funny thing is that White Castle never came up, with the exception that we were in the room and Harold and Kumar going to White Castle was on. And
yes.
That's the only reason, because Nick, who I went with, was asking me, we could do 30 sliders. And I was like, well, I've never been to White Castle. And he's like, okay, we're going. So we figured out there's a White Castle that's one block away from Lucas Oil Stadium, which had some con activities, so we walked down there. The one downside was they have one of those multi-soda dispenser machines.
Mm-hmm.
I have never seen so many sodas be out on one machine.
Oh, I bet.
There's like five. I had like a choice of five, which is what you normally get, but, it's, like, it's one of those things. And it was right next to some postal or facility. So that was fun. Well, not really. Okay. Like Art said, I had a great time at Gen Con. Yeah, I probably will never experience that again. I kind of do want to go back, but maybe not next year. It's funny. We were in the room. I really wanted to see Big Trouble Little China. It's just their schedule just didn't work out. And we ended up watching that dumpster fire of a movie. oh my God! Well, I can't remember what it's called now. MacGruber. MacGruber. Oh my God. Okay. All right. So as far as movies and stuff, I finally got off my butt, and I'm not gonna give credit to Tad for this. It's not The Expanse, but I ended up watching season 4. I think it's 4 of Killjoys, because Killjoys just came back for season 5. So I wanted to be caught up and, I don't know, maybe watch it weekly as they come out. So I did watch the first one of season 5, but now I'm 2 weeks behind again. So, what are you going to do? I'm enjoying where they're going. And that first episode of the new season, you can kind of tell that they're acknowledging that this is going to be the last season because, some crazier stuff is happening, but they're kind of filling in backstory. Like the first episode is we get to meet how Dutch and Johnny first ended up, being partners or whatever. So I'm definitely going to be sad when this show is going to be, over, and it's going to be soon because they said this is going to be the last season. So if you haven't checked it out, check out some Killjoys. I really like it, and I wouldn't mind playing, you know, maybe if they did like a Savage Worlds version of Killjoys, I would greatly enjoy that, even though they're probably equivalent settings that could come pretty close.
Yeah.
Let me go back to Gen Con for a minute. Now, I go to a convention that's probably every 4 months in Southern California. And, you know, going to Gen Con, there's certain things that just aren't going to happen at my local con. And, you know, you get to, like, if you're a fan of the Dice Tower or you know, designers, I mean, you'll see them walking around the, you know, the vendor hall or whatever. Another thing that happened is that a buddy and I played in a Starfinder Society game. And after the game was over, we got to meet the writer of the adventure.
Nice.
That's another thing that I, you know, would only happen at Gen Con or probably other conventions other than the one that I go to. But that was another first. In addition to Killjoys, I sat the family down on Monday because I took Monday off for it being a recovery day between con and back to real life. I made them watch Ready Player One with me.
Okay.
And my son had already seen it because we went to the theater to go see it. But my wife enjoyed the music. She kind of had a semi-handle on what was going on, but she really enjoyed the music and the love story at the end. And my daughter kind of had the opposite experience because, oh my God, old music. And she did like the story, but oh my God, the love story is so cheesy kind of thing. So I kind of had mixed reaction to Ready Player One. As far as the Blu-ray is concerned, they get an F for planning out the chapters. Because if I was doing the chapters, you have a chapter for the first challenge, which is what they have. But give me a chapter so if I just want to watch the challenge parts again, I jump right into the challenges.
Right.
They did not do that. And it's not a short movie, but, you know, I think they whipped out 11 chapters. So I think they kind of phoned that part in. But still, pick up the Blu-ray if you're a Blu-ray watcher.
Okay. I saw a guy dressed as his avatar at Gen Con. It was really good. He walked by me, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. And just totally blew me away. Some of the costuming was just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, let me back up. This is my first con that I've really been around cosplay.
Right.
I mean, like, a lot of cosplay.
Yeah.
It was amazing. The funniest cosplay, there's two cosplayers that I'm going to remember as the funniest. Let me take that back. There's one that's funny, and then there was a band that was funny. Because we're walking down that main hall where the vendor hall is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hearing the Return of the Jedi music, not the special edition one that you're going to hear now, but the one you can't hear anymore, the original one. And I look, and the band is all in Star Trek uniforms. And I'm sure there's a fanboy somewhere losing his mind. Probably more than one.
Yeah.
So when we're... I saw this on the Dice Tower Instagram. I saw this guy's cosplay, and then when we were walking back from Lucas Oil Stadium in that tunnel that takes you back to the convention center, I saw the dude. So it was Thanos carrying a jar of dirt, and on the jar of dirt was a label that said Spider-Man.
Oh.
I know.
Rough.
Too soon, but I thought it was hilarious. And, you know, that was one thing that I was kind of unprepared for, was the amount of cosplay and then the amount of bands that just set up and are playing in the hallways.
Yeah.
And I'll remember Sunday, I was walking down the hallway to go to the JW Marriott, and I was feeling a little down because the con experience was about to be over, and they had these three students from some conservatory or Indiana University or something, but they're all like younger classical musicians. No costumes or anything, but they had, you know, a violin, they had a flute, and they had an oboe. And they did the three-cup thing, where you just put a dollar in what you want to hear. Lord of the Rings, Zelda, or Final Fantasy.
Nice.
And it was just, I put in $2 for Lord of the Rings, and they played this three-minute ditty of Lord of the Rings. And I was fighting to hold back tears, because it was so, I mean, when, you always hear that, like, on radio or on YouTube, and you're like, yeah, but when it's right in front of you,
Mm-hmm.
And I might have been a little emotional, but it was just unbelievable. So that was the kind of thing that singular experience that kind of makes me want to go to Gen Con at least, you know, one more time.
Right.
Kind of thing. Maybe when I retired or something. I don't know. All right. So talk about Ready Player One, talked about Killjoys, and I don't know. I might see if the daughter wants to go see the Meg this weekend because she loves shark movies. She loved The Shallows. I don't think she saw the one with the cage where those two women are stuck in the cage like at the bottom of the ocean or something.
Oh, okay.
But yeah.
Was The Shallows the one where she was stuck on the buoy?
Yes.
Or was that?
Yes.
Okay. What was the one that had it was 49 feet or?
Yeah, that's the one with that's the cage one.
I think that was the cage one. Okay.
So, yes, so I had a lovely time last weekend, but a little light on the movies. So.
Yeah, I remembered something else that I watched.
Okay, go ahead.
I went and saw Teen Titans Go to the movies. Me and Aubrey went and saw it. Thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a great successor to a follow-up to the Teen Titans Go TV show. It was everything I wanted it to be, and I enjoyed it. And it even had a cameo by Stan Lee.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. I didn't watch the entire movie, but Fist Fight. I ended up watching the first half of Fist Fight, and I was like, you know what? I don't know if I want to continue watching this. And then during Gen Con, I ended up watching the second half. And
oh, that's
I was
funny.
Like, oh, my God, it got so much better. And maybe it was just the fight that, you know, they did a good job making a hilarious fight scene between Ice Cube and Charlie Day.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not going to win you awards or anything. But, I enjoyed that movie kind of as a reimagining of 3 o'clock High.
Mm, yeah.
Kind of thing. All right. So we're going to end our share time there. And so the last segment of the show is going to be the news segment. So, Art, what do you want to start with?
Okay, leading off with – wait a second. Oh, right there. Okay, MoviePass cuts films to 3 per month. Another week, another change of the terms and conditions to beleaguered movie ticketing subscription service MoviePass. The company has announced a new policy which takes effect August 15th and will limit all customers to 3 movies a month, down from the 1 a day offer it currently allows. At the same time, there's scratch plans to raise the monthly rate and will keep it at $9.95 for now. Parent company Helios and Matheson Analytics said in a statement that only 15% of its subscribers had used the service to watch 4 or more movies a month, and the new model won't impact them. As of June, MoviePass's monthly cash deficit was $45 million. The company's stock has taken a beating in recent weeks and currently sits at just under 10 cents after starting the day at 7 cents. So, there you go. Continued woes by MoviePass.
Yeah, well, you know, they were kind of predicting this, but...
They were.
Okay, so my first story is from The Hollywood Reporter. DC has stopped trying to beat Marvel at its own game. And so, basically what they're... I mean, the short version of this, I'm not going to read the entire thing, is that Aquaman, the next Wonder Woman movie, and this really weird Joker standalone that's coming... Mm-hmm. They're not going to be connected to other films.
Oh.
And this is very interesting because, you know, this new direction is a result after Geoff Johns leaving as the head of DC. I don't know if it's DC Movies or Warner Brothers or whatever. But they kind of, maybe they're trying to figure out, or they're starting to figure out that they can be their own thing.
Right.
So it says, after years of attempting to repeat the success of Marvel Studios by basically attempting to repeat Marvel Studios' model of movie making, Warner Brothers and DC Entertainment may have uncovered an alternate path to success by letting DC be DC. Last month's San Diego Comic-Con has sparked discussion about DC's new direction, post-Justice League, and the failure thereof. In some sense, this is a bit of a misnomer, especially when it comes to films like Aquaman and Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman 1984. After all, both of these picks firmly exist in the same universe as what has come before, without any sizable retcons or rewrites of the previous movies. While there's clearly a visual and tonal shift from the Zack Snyder Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman : Dawn of Justice in both, that had already started with 2017's Wonder Woman and even continued in Justice League, directed by part by Snyder with Joss Whedon. This was a new direction. It's more than a year old already. But the idea of allowing the films to coexist in the same universe, yet each have their own look and feel, is something that is quintessentially DC. While Marvel's comic book origins are rooted in a small group of creators trying to follow the aesthetic choices of just three men, Jack Kirby, Stan Lee, and Steve Ditko, DC's comic book output has always been historically more varied. The Superman comics look different from the Wonder Woman comics, which look different from the Batman comics, and so on. When the characters had teamed in the 1940s Justice Society of America stories, individual chapters were illustrated in different styles to match their regular looks. When the Justice League of America was created two decades later, the style used by artist Mike Sikowski was gloriously off-model for most of its members. So it keeps going on and on. So it's unclear how much of this process is actually intentional and formalized. The DC movies haven't had announced imprints, after all. Although there have been rumblings of a separate label for standalone movies. Had Batman vs. Superman and Justice League been massive hits, or Wonder Woman a flop for that matter, it's arguably just as likely that whatever films followed would have hewed to Snyder's template more closely rather than diversifying. But whether or not the current approach has always been the plan, or something arrived at by mistake, the future of DC's movie output more closely resembles DC comic book history than at any point in the last decade, if not longer. Perhaps this won't be the road to success for the DC properties on the big screen, but if nothing else, at least they'll fail in a manner more true to what the company has historically been. So I said I wasn't going to read most of it, but I almost read the entire thing. So, Art, what do you got next?
Okay, on a completely different note, this article headline caught my eye. Multiple studios keen to hire James Gunn. Disney may have washed their hands of him, but plenty of other studios are very keen to employ filmmaker James Gunn, from the sounds of it, including Marvel Studios. That kind of confused me, but we'll see. HeVision reports that the reason there hasn't been much talk from anyone, be it Gunn, Marvel's Kevin Feige, or Disney, is that discussions are still ongoing as to how to proceed, and also in regards to Gunn's contract for a third Guardians of the Galaxy film. Gunn is expected to get a large $7 to $10 million minimum payout from Disney over his firing. Gunn has legal grounds, as the offensive tweets that led to his firing happened well before he signed with Marvel Studios, so there's no breach. Any potential settlement would also dictate how fast Gunn could jump to another project, and if Disney would be able to use the script that the filmmaker had worked on for the new Guardians prior to his departure. Other studios are lining up to offer projects to Gunn, including Warner Brothers Pictures, along with plenty of other high-profile Oscar-winning producers. But no offers can be made until Gunn is completely free from his Marvel Studios contract, which will take time. So it's nice to know at least he's going to be taken care of if nothing is able to be worked out. It'll be interesting to see where it all goes.
Yeah, so that was something that I had on a tab you might have heard the click when you started reading. But one thing that they kind of alluded to: what if Gunn ends up working for DC?
Yeah.
What would you want him doing?
Oh,
Suicide Squad 2?
No. No, I'd want him doing something more obscure. Maybe something with the New Gods. Maybe Legion. I can see him doing Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah, that would be crazy. All right, let's go back to ABC, or let's go back to Marvel. I meant to say ABC planning several new Marvel series. So this isn't in the article, but remember that Disney wasn't really committed to the spinoff from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because, Bobby and Hunter, they basically wrote off those two and said, no, we're going to do a spinoff, and then they canceled the spinoff.
Right.
Around the same time that they decided they didn't want Agent Carter around anymore.
Right.
And then now they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to have more Marvel series. So So it says here, nevertheless, and even with competition from Netflix, Freeform, and Disney's upcoming streaming service, ABC is set to push forward with more shows based on Marvel properties. Speaking at the TCA upfronts yesterday, ABC Network President Channing Dungey tells The Hollywood Reporter that there are several Marvel projects in the works. We're cooking up a couple things for broadcast. There's one thing I want to talk about, and a Marvel TV head, Jeff Loeb, won't let me. Both an untitled series from 12 Years a Slave scribe John Ridley and a series based on the property Damage Control have been reported as an in development at one point or another, but neither has had any progress in months. Dungey also spoke about delay of the sixth season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to the summer of next year, saying it is my hope that by moving it to summer, where our live same-day ratings are less important, and it might be able to continue for longer. TV's still going off of ratings. So, yeah, who knows? They could probably step back from these things, too. So, but there might be more Marvel on your ABC there. So keep an eye out.
Okay. Absolutely. All right. Vin Diesel begins filming Bloodshot. Sony Pictures Entertainment actor Vin Diesel have announced the start of production on the upcoming Bloodshot comic adaptation via an Instagram video earlier today. Visual effects guru Dave Wilson will be making his featured directorial debut on the project, which will be shot in Cape Town ahead of a February 21st, 2020 release. Oh my goodness, that's so far away. The story follows a mortally wounded soldier resurrected with cutting-edge nanotechnology and tasked with rounding up superpowered outcasts called Harbingers. He has the ability to interface directly with technology. The plan is for a 5-film shared universe based on Valiant comics. There's also been a swap. Guy Pearce is reportedly in talks to replace Michael Sheen on the film adaptation of Valiant Entertainment's Bloodshot. So I've always been a fan of Guy Pearce. It'll be interesting to add him into the mix with Vin Diesel. So, yeah, Bloodshot, moving forward and about a year and a half away.
Well, speaking of long time off,
mm-hmm.
How do you feel about Return to Dark Tower? Now, when I say Return to Dark Tower, I am not talking about that there's going to be more movies from the Stephen King novel series. We're talking about that Restoration Games, which kind of their business strategy is to reprint old games, but update them and make them better. They want to do a game based on the old Dark Tower game, which I used to have. I used to love that game.
I've never played it. I've seen it. I've seen a working copy. There was somebody used to come to one of the game groups, and I've seen people play it. I've never played it myself, so I don't have any nostalgia for it. I am a fan of the original artist, something Pepper, Dave Pepper. He also did art for a game called Dragon Master, which I was a big fan of. I love that his art styles kind of had this Art Deco feel to it. But I'm sure that art is not coming along with the new edition, and I've never played it, so I don't really have any. I don't have a dog in this fight.
Okay. I think it's my turn.
Oh,
right?
It's me.
No, go ahead.
I would say it's my turn. Well, you brought up the Dark Tower.
Yeah, go ahead. All right. I forgot where we were. Go ahead.
Okay. Jackson Smulders set for Spider-Man sequel. They've been rumored, and now it's official. Samuel L. Jackson and Colby Smulders will reprise the roles of Nick Fury and Maria Hill in the upcoming Spider-Man Far From Home. Marvel Studios president Kevin Feige previously confirmed the 2019 sequel will take Peter Parker out of New York for a European adventure in London, and will be set in the aftermath of both Avengers Infinity War and Avengers 4. Considering both Fury and Hill were last seen in Infinity War post-credit scene, vanishing from existence, it's not clear how they'll return, be it in a flashback or a solution to the fourth Avengers allowing their return. I think we all know how this goes, right? I mean, nobody's really surprised or shocked or, you know, I mean, it's just a matter of who comes back. But so many people are coming back. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Well, with the time stone, there's no it's very easy for them to wave their hands and bring someone back.
Right. Or even just following regular comics continuity about, you know, eventually they get the gauntlet away from Thanos and somebody else snaps their fingers and things go back. That's just the way the comics went. Okay, so, I mean, nobody's really surprised by this. But anyway, so, but they've officially signed on to be in the next Spider-Man movie. That's the real news there.
Cool. All right, so I have one more real news story, and then I have another funny one. Okay. And this comes out of nowhere. But from the Hollywood Reporter again, we have superhero heist movie in the works at Legendary. Okay, so I'm thinking superhero heist movie. Okay, so the entitled project is from the duo behind Irish revenge thriller, I gotta talk, Bad Day for the Cut. Legendary has picked up an untitled superhero heist project from the filmmaking team behind Irish revenge thriller Bad Day for the Cut. Chris Baugh and Brendan Mullen are behind the project, with the two writing and Baugh on board to direct. Both will produce. The story is described as being, I can tell you're so into this, the story is described as being a subversion on the superhero genre, in which a group of career criminals stage a heist on the lair of a superhero and must escape with their lives when everything goes wrong.
No, that actually does sound interesting.
Yeah, it sounds like an interesting premise. So hopefully this will happen. So keep your fingers crossed, everybody. All right, Art, what you got next?
Okay, so what I'm hearing is I've got one regular story, and then I'm going to have to pull us out of a hole after your last story.
This last one is not from Crack, but it might as well be.
Okay. I'm just preparing myself now. But okay, Willis to lead MoviePass 10 Minutes Gone. Bruce Willis is set to star as the antagonist of the thriller 10 Minutes Gone, which marks the third project of MoviePass films following Gotti and The Toe. The story revolves around a man who loses 10 minutes of his memory due to being hit by a stray bullet in the midst of a bank heist gone wrong. He must race to assemble the pieces of his broken memory in order to find out who sabotaged the job and took all the money, all while being pursued by a powerful crime boss, Bruce Willis, hell-bent on recovering the cash. So they've got three movies greenlit, and their movie and the thing that got them started is falling apart. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes.
Yeah, true. Very true. All right. Okay, how am I going to start this? Okay, so I found this off of Deadspin. Deadspin is a website that mainly is very negative about all the people in sports kind of thing. But I thought this was a funny thing to talk about. So someone wrote in and asked this columnist, which game show has the best final round? And this really isn't a serious list, but it's just I was just cracking up reading this. So it says, nothing pleases me more than when I tune into Jeopardy or Wheel right as the final round is beginning, knowing that I've skipped over all the tedious regular season puzzles and I'm getting right to the big money action. One of the reasons that Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was such a huge deal a long time ago, because they figured out a way to make the entire show feel like one big final round of another game show. I was hooked like everyone else, and I would definitely watch an all final round cable channel for at least 3 minutes. But let me try to rank them for you now. So number one, Double Dare Obstacle Course. A couple of bratty kids forced to root around a giant nose looking for flags and fake snot, only to have the clock run out before they can get the miniature car? There's your winner. Number two, Jeopardy, but only when I know the answer to the question. Every time the final category is revealed to be opera, my eyes roll into the back of my head. Three, Tic-Tac-Doe. Remember the dragon? Screw that dragon. That goddamn dragon gave me a heart attack every time I saw it. My kids could watch Friday the 13th and have zero nightmares of any kind. Meanwhile, an 8-bit dragon ruined my shit when I was 9. I don't get it. Do you remember Tic-Tac-Doe? The dragon he's talking about?
Vaguely?
Okay. Yeah. All right. Number four, and this list is completely bull, but number four, The Price is Right. The insidious thing about The Price is Right is that it's just one big gigantic ad for Listerine and cars. So this is, this guy's probably older than we are.
Yeah.
And yet, I will absolutely watch the Showcase Showdown just to ooh and ah at all the useless crap on display. Oh my God, a camper! That showcase must be worth $1 million. I also liked it when the bulk of a showcase package was deliberately terrible just to get you jazzed about a Mercury at the very end. You get half a dinette set, a copy of Pictionary, some used napkins, and a new car. Number five, Family Feud. There's always one family member who blows it for the rest of the family. Or you can say Family Feud or every cooperative game. And the best part is when they all try to console the family dope for costing them money, even though you know they're pissed. Number six, Remote Control. Do you remember Remote Control? MTV?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
This was the one where you had to identify 9 videos in 30 seconds, and they always tossed in an obscure video from, like, the hoodoo gurus to stop you cold. Diabolical. The $100,000 pyramid. Fun fact, no one ever won the $100,000 on the show. By the time they got to the penultimate level of the pyramid, it was all categories like things an 18th century French monk might say on Ascension Day. Number eight, name that tune. You had to guess 7 songs in 30 seconds, and every song was some big band joint that predated both world wars. It was impossible. Number nine, there's 11 of these, so we're almost there. Number nine, Hollywood Squares. This was the final round where you had to pick a car you wanted from the next stage, and then you picked a key. I bet John Davidson was more than used to presiding over key party-type events. And then your favorite celeb from the squares, usually Jim J. Bullock, sat with you as you attempted to gun the engine with a selected key. It had nothing to do with the game itself, but that didn't matter. Number 10, being hit by an oncoming speedboat. Number 11, Wheel of Fortune. They give you all the easy letters because the puzzle never has them. And then you got some poor gym teacher from some flyover country trying to guess a Scrabble word with only C, H, M, and O in their pocket. It's impossible and stupid. Another thing that angers me about the final wheel round is that it happens like 20 minutes into the broadcast. They managed to stretch promotional considerations for another 10 minutes somehow. Knowing how little Pat Sajak actually has to work, I find this enraging. Can you really not fill the entire half hour with gaming? And there's your top 11. Which game show has the best final round?
Yeah, you know, it wasn't always the case that they gave you all those letters.
Right.
I remember back in the day, and I think it was probably sometime in the 80s, where... and everybody always took those letters because they're the most common letters. So eventually they just started giving them to you to be like, here, there's those letters. We're not using them. Stop picking them.
You know, one thing that my buddy Nick struggles with all whenever he goes plays RPGs at cons, almost invariably he ends up playing with players that are much younger than he is.
Mm-hmm.
And no one gets his references.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the the reference that comes up like every other game is would you like the rest on account or gift certificate? Because if you remember Wheel of Fortune, in the beginning they used to be able to buy stuff with the money that they won.
Yep.
So
I'll take the dog statue for 200. Yeah, no, absolutely. Okay, so not as bad as some of the other ones have been. That was actually interesting. But still, Universal puts Cowboy Ninja Viking on hold. So I don't know how this snuck up on me. I don't know if we talked about this at some point. There's a comic out there called Cowboy Ninja Viking. It is from Image Comics, which I collected way back in the day. I'm sure there's a more recent property. It's got Chris Pratt in it, or it's supposed to have Chris Pratt in it. Like I said, it's on hold. But the premise is, Chris Pratt is a new kind of assassin in the film who manifests the toughest skills of 3 different personas. So he's either a cowboy, a ninja, or a Viking. At, you know, whichever is most appropriate at the time for whatever skill set he currently needs. I can't even imagine how that's set up as a comic book. But it's on hold, and so we won't get to see Chris Pratt being a cowboy, ninja, Viking.
Yeah, it seems a little light that they could add like 3 more things on there.
Yeah, you know.
All right, so that is going to do it for news, and that's going to bring us to this episode of Backseat Box Office. So everyone, thank you for listening to this episode of Backseat Box Office. Our website is at backseatproducers.com, where you can find a bunch of stuff. So go check it out. Other than that... Again, thank you everyone for listening. Take care of yourselves. And Art, what are your parting words?
Good night, everybody. Go watch a movie. Call us up and tell us about it.